Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Welcome in, Anita Marks with you here on 98.7 ESPN, a special podcast. Why? Well, we've got the Belmont coming up, and that will be on Saturday. In fact, I'm really excited. My Saturday show is going to be a special time. It's going to be from 2 to 5:30 leading into the Belmont. Typically, my Saturday show is I have to think about it, right? Typically my Saturday show is from noon to 3. So a special time on Saturday. But getting ready for it, I thought it'd be great to get some of the best in the business and some of my dear friends together and put a podcast together to get you in the know and ready for Saturday. So as always, and I want to say, Rob, this has to be like the fourth year, right? Rob Masiello, horse owner, joining us now. And you always join me on my radio shows to preview and recap the Triple Crown and what a very different year it is right now. So first and foremost, I appreciate you co-hosting this podcast for me, Rob. Thank you.
Thanks. I'm moving up in the world. I went from a guest to a co-host. I'm excited.
You're cute. All right. So let's dive into it. And first and foremost, obviously, because of COVID-19, the fact that we're in a pandemic, this is a very different year for horse racing. And that is the Triple Crown. As we know, the three races typically starts with the Kentucky Derby, then Preakness, and then Belmont. But because of COVID-19 and all that we've experienced, now Belmont is the first leg of the three. Talk about why that decision was made.
Yeah, so it's obviously, and thanks again for having me, Anita. It's obviously like every other industry on earth right now. It's horse racing's gone through a lot of changes in the last few months. So to kind of walk through the decisions, I guess basically the first move was in mid-March, I think on March 16th or the middle of March, Churchill Downs decided to move the Derby from its traditional first Saturday in May slot. Obviously, there's just the ability to have fans, at Churchill Downs was just not going to happen. So they moved that race to Labor Day. And then a couple months later, Pimlico followed suit and moved the Preakness to the first, I think it's October 3rd or 5th this year. It's the first Saturday in October. So, so that's kind of where those two races ended up. And then from the Irish perspective, look, we were in New York. We were in a much different situation than those other states. We obviously had the biggest breakout. And unfortunately, there was a pretty substantial breakout on the backside at Belmont Park. We had over several dozen employees that got sick with COVID over the last 2 months. And unfortunately, one passed away. So we've sort of been in a position where we've kind of had to be kind of waiting to see what was going to happen with the other jurisdictions. And then on May 16th, Andrew Cuomo, the governor, announced that we would be able to open. So NYRA was kind of in a decision where they could have either, tried to run the race in June like they normally do, albeit a little bit later than typical, or, run in the fall, which is – so Belmont's meet goes from – in normal years, it goes from late April until early July, and then everyone goes up to Saratoga for the summer and comes back down after Labor Day. And then the fall meet is sort of like early September through the end of October. So the two options would have been like kind of that June, early July timeframe or the fall. So there are a couple reasons why they didn't choose to do like the typical Derby, Preakness, Belmont. One is just, I think that there was a lot of concern about trying to run this race in the fall because just, no one, especially certainly in April and even today, no one really knows if there's going to be a second wave in the fall. And if we wait until, let's say early November to run the race, there's just no telling, whether or not no one knows what the world's going to be like in November, obviously. I don't think anyone knows what the world's going to be like next week. So, I think the idea of just getting this, running this race when things can be open, I think is a strong selling point. And then the other thing too is I know it's not as well known as a Triple Crown, but our our championship in racing. It's called the Breeders' Cup, and that happens in early November every year. So it would have been difficult, I think, to kind of compete against the Breeders' Cup in early November, because you know, you have to remember you have the Belmont Stakes, but you also have a series of other races on the undercard that draw a lot of betting handle and are prestigious races in their own right. And so we would have lost a lot of those horses, especially to the Breeders' Cup in New York. So it was a tough decision. I think that NYRA, which is the New York Racing Association, made the right one by running in June. And then I think the other issue is the distance. So typically the Belmont Stakes is a mile and a half. This year, the Belmont Stakes can be a mile and an eighth. So why did they decide to do that? So, and I'd be interested to hear what some of your guests have to say today. I personally think they made the right decision. But, you know, there was a lot that went into it. You know, ultimately, I think it just comes down to the fact that a lot of these horses in March and April have been training, but, you know, they're not really training for anything specifically, because no one really knew in March or April what tracks were going to be open. Kind of what the landscape of racing was going to look like. So when New York finally got the go ahead to race in the middle of May, you know, I think that there was a big kind of debate in the industry of like, well, you know, if we're going to run this race, is it really fair to ask horses that have not been truly training to run a mile and a half on the dirt? Is it fair to ask them, you know, to run that race? And specifically, I think the horses that have been based in New York, you know, some of the other jurisdictions, specifically down in Florida and Arkansas, were able to continue racing throughout COVID. But in New York, again, we had an unfortunate breakout of COVID on the backside. So there hadn't been racing since mid-March. And I just think that, you know, trying to balance out what's the most fair to the most number of connections of horses, I think that the right decision to make was to shorten the distance up and make it a distance that's a little bit more reasonable for horses to run and that haven't been in kind of that training and racing grind of the spring that they normally are.
So again, just to recap, Rob Masiello, Anita Marks with you on this podcast. And Rob mentioned the slew of guests that we're going to have joining us on the podcast. I'm quite excited about it. Dan Torgman, I hope I'm pronouncing that properly, is going to join us as well. Chris Felica, aka the Bear, is going to join us on the show with his picks, and Ron Lombardi, owner of Mr. Amore Staples, is going to join us as well. So we're going to have a cast of characters joining us on the podcast, which I'm quite excited about. So just to recap, so the Belmont will happen this Saturday. The length obviously shortened for a number of reasons, and one in particular, and I'm okay with it, and I think that's the health and safety and concern for the horses not being able to run the mile and a half. The Kentucky Derby will happen on September 5th, and the Preakness is scheduled to happen on October 3rd. Of course, this is all hoping that there's not another outbreak when it comes to COVID-19. And we have our guest who's joining us now, which is really, really exciting. So without further ado, let's bring in another guest. And hold on one second. I just want to call up. So we've got Dan. And Dan, I feel horrible. You and I did not discuss the proper pronunciation of your last name prior to the podcast. I want to say, is it Torgman?
Oh, you nailed it. Absolutely, yes. Nailed it.
That is, Dan, that is unbelievable. Probably one of the worst things about me is pronouncing names. So the fact that I nailed it out of the box is huge. He's with America's Best Racing, AmericasABR.com. So Dan, really great to have you on the podcast. And a small world, obviously a very small world when it comes to horse racing. You and Rob Masiello, you guys know each other. You've met previously prior to us doing this podcast.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Rob was gracious enough to allow our cameras at ABR to follow him around the sales ground a couple of years ago, I believe, at Saratoga. I'm sure we've creeped on him other times too, around the races and around the track too. But yeah, no, that the whole the West Point team is one that we absolutely love at ABR. They do a lot of great for the sport of racing, and that's what we do at America's Best Racing. We really try to introduce people to the sport in a very sort of easy to understand way, make it approachable. We try to explain wagering to them. We try to explain all the different things you might encounter when you come to the track, when you can come to the track, which obviously now you can't really go to the races due to everything that's going on. But hopefully soon enough, we'll be back out there.
All right. So first things first, because we were talking about some of the topics heading into the Belmont and, of course, the Triple Crown. And I was letting our listeners out there know exactly what dates to put on their docket. But I want to ask you, do you feel, and this is something that Rob was really curious to hear your response, are you okay with, do you think it was the right decision from NYRA to decrease the length of the race for the Belmont from a mile and a half to a mile and an eighth?
You know, I don't know if it was the right decision, but I think it was the they were in a position where they were between a rock and a hard place, really. Look, the race on Saturday draws 10 horses. I honestly believe if the race were kept at a mile and a half, it would have drawn probably 5 horses. You just can't have horses at this stage of their progression when you don't have any real buildup. Now, granted, some of them have already run a mile and a 16th, a mile and an eighth, and maybe could take that next step depending on their pedigree and depending on who the trainer is and depending on how much foundation is there. But largely, you're going to have a lot of trainers who were skeptical and owners as well. I mean, that's, you know, those are their investments to risk putting a horse into a mile and a half race at this stage of the season, especially knowing there are so many other targets down the road. You put a horse into a mile and a half race, could take enough out of them, I think, at least, to where you potentially compromise them, not only for the Derby and for the Preakness, but for some of these other big three-year-old races, which are really stacked together over the next 6 to 8 weeks, including the Bluegrass Stakes, including the, well, not that you'd go to the Bluegrass Stakes, but the Haskell and the Traverse. So, you know, I think they were in a tough spot, and you look at how a lot of these races filled on Saturday. They're not very large fields, and in some of the, especially like the Woody Stevens is one of my favorite races to bet every year. Ton of horses in it usually, and you could find a price or two. Not this year. It's a small field, but it's a quality field. And I think they did a good enough job of attracting quality in some of their core stakes races. And then the Belmont Stakes, you want a bigger field. I mean, for the first race of the Triple Crown, we always think of the Derby and the 20 horses and, you know, the awesome betting opportunities. This is not quite that. But I think we'd be a lot worse off if the race were run at a mile and a half. And all that, I say all that, and I also say that, obviously, personally, I'm a New Yorker, and I've been to the Belmont Stakes as far back as I could remember with my dad. That race holds a very special place in my heart, and part of the reason why is because of the mile and a half, because it is the true test of the champion. So, yeah, sentimentally, it's not ideal, and I don't love it, but I think – I don't know if they had many other viable options.
Well, gentlemen, it's going to be a different race, that's for sure. Not just because of the COVID-19, but the way that NBC is going to be televising it. Mike Tirico, very dear friend of mine, he's not going to be at Belmont. He's going to be in Stamford, Connecticut. He'll be broadcasting from afar. There's going to be 7 cameras at the Belmont instead of 25. There's only going to be 50 people working the broadcast as opposed to 200. Mics are going to be on the jockeys, track reporters. There'll be 2 track reporters there. They'll have a 6-foot boom mic. And what's really going to be interesting is there's going to be virtual watch parties that NBC is going to broadcast with owners. So owners are going to have their virtual watch parties. And I guess I'm assuming it's going to be on Zoom. That's how we're recording this podcast right now. So everything's going to feel different. It's going to be different. So Dan, let's start there for folks who aren't going to be at the track. Right? And maybe folks that are listening to this podcast right now, like me, not really big horse racing enthusiasts, but really love the Triple Crown and get into it at this time of year. How should and how can people bet come Saturday?
It's just the one thing that I think when I speak to people who don't typically watch and wager on horse racing, I think they're surprised about when I tell them, look, you don't have to go to the track. There are plenty of legal, safe wagering websites that you can go to. And it's literally takes a couple of minutes to go. I'll just name a couple that I use. ExpressBet is one. TVG is another. You've got Naira Bets. You've got TwinSpires. You've got FirstBet. Those are all super safe betting platforms. All you got to do really is if you're in a legal wagering state, and I believe to bet on horse racing, there are 30 or 31 legal wagering states. You go on there and you just drop your email address in. You drop in some basic information. Obviously, you got to verify that you're 18. But literally, the process takes 3 minutes. You can do it from home, do it on your cell phone, do it on an iPad, do it on your laptop, and then just sit back and you watch and bet the races all day long from the comfort of your home. It's a really simple and easy thing to do. On americasbestracing.net, we've got like a step-by-step tutorial on it if you truly want to take that step. And it's great to have, because I mean, unlike other sports, which I think really suffered during this time where, you know, sports shut down because largely they drive on the fuel of attendance and concessions and tickets. With horse racing, you don't really have to be at the track to enjoy it and to engage with it. So I would say go to americasbestracing.net. We've got a ton of information that sort of help fill in some of the blanks there. And for Belmont Stakes Day in particular, look, you know, like this card, as I mentioned earlier, some of the bigger stakes races have drawn a little light, which means there are fewer horses in the race, which means you're going to have to get a little creative if you want to make money in these races. You can't just, you know, find, you know, a 10 or 15 to one shot in a 12 horse field. There aren't many 12 horse fields on Saturday. So you may want to find a horse that you like that may not be the same price, maybe a shorter price, but that you can really have a strong opinion about, and then, you know, kind of hammer in an exacto or bet a big double. I can talk to you about a race coming up here, the Jiper Stakes, which is actually presented by America's Best Racing, so I have to drop that in. The Jiper Stakes is the 9th race of the day. The Belmont Stakes is the 10th race. So I'm looking to really I think my strongest opinion comes in the 9th race. I'm going to make an investment there where I play a double in that race going into the Belmont Stakes with a couple of horses in the Belmont. I'm going to try to beat Tiz the Law. I don't know that he's beatable, but I'm going to at least try to, because, you know, as Rob could tell us, we're horse players. We're gamblers. We don't want even money. We're not trying to bet 10 bucks and get 18 bucks back. We want real money.
All right, gentlemen, why don't we do that? Why don't we start there and talk about the Belmont? And Tiz the Law, obviously the favorite, has won 4 races. You know, Rob, let's start with you. You know, I know, you know, you and I have had some conversation on him, obviously, and we all understand, you know, as you said, Dan, you're not going to profit a lot of money if you do bet the favorite. But your thoughts on Tiz the Law, Rob?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's, you know, he's very much a horse to beat. I don't know about you, Dan. I always have a soft spot for horses that break their maiden up in Saratoga. Mm-hmm. Dan and I both spend a lot of time up in Saratoga. I'm up there pretty much the whole meet. So it's always really cool to see kind of one of the cool things about Saratoga is that you get to see, you know, it's really kind of the first spot that you get to see some of the stars of tomorrow. So, you know, a lot of the big, outfits kind of debut their 2-year-olds up in Saratoga. And you know that when you watch some of those races that you're going to see some of those horses the following year in the Triple Crown races. So I just always have a soft spot for that. He's also a New York bred, which is really cool. And he's actually owned, by the same connections that owned Funny Side back in, 2003. So, a lot of good connections there. And, you know, I just think he's been sort of the most consistently good horse. Like you said, he's 4-for-5 this year, and his one loss was in the slop at Churchill Downs. And I thought he ran a pretty good race that day too. So, you know, he's very much a horse to beat. He's not going to be a super exciting, price. I think he's going to be pretty close to his morning line, which I believe was 6-to-5. But, you know, he drew a great post. And one thing to also point out about this race is the way that Belmont is configured, 1 1/8 is actually a 1-turn race. So they're going to be starting way out on the chute. You know, they're basically going to have, you know, 5 furlongs of running room before they get to a turn. And he drew an outside post, which is pretty ideal. I think Manny Franco, the rider, will be able to break. I mean, this horse, and this is a theme, Dan, that Anita and I talk about every year, and I'd love to get your take on, is, you know, I just think in these Triple Crown races, the horses that have, and it's especially true for the Derby, but I think it's true for all the Triple Crown races, the horses that have the tactical speed, the ability to, you know, break and kind of get themselves into a position in a race without, and then being able to kind of shut it off and kind of turn the engine on idle and just, and again, it's that ability to have the speed to kind of get into a good position, I think is so important, especially in the Derby when there's 19 other horses, but then also the mental ability to turn it off and not be too keyed up and not burn up too much energy early. And that's just, you know, I think Tis the Law is very much of that ilk. And I think this post is just kind of a perfect post for him, man. He's going to be able to break and he's going to have plenty of time to kind of maneuver himself over to where he wants to be. Going into that turn. And I think I'm going to try to beat him myself, but I think he's going to be very tough to beat on Saturday.
Dan?
Yeah. And I completely agree to Rob's point about a horse being tactical, that being a valuable asset in Triple Crown races. Traditionally, if they were going a mile and a half, the only other variable that I would say that you'd weigh more heavily is pedigree and their ability to get that distance. That's a variable that's not part of the equation this year, obviously, with the cutback. And so what I do when I approach any race, especially one of these, is I look at pace and I look at how pace might unfold and see if there are little angles in which I can sort of envision how the race unfolds and if that projection that I'm making in my mind, if that could potentially benefit one horse over another, and potentially I find value in there. So I think part of the discussion, there was a late entry into this field, a horse named Four Left, who last ran in Dubai. And he's got a bit, you know, he won wire to wire fashion in that race and has got some speed, has run on the turf, has run on an all weather surface. He's been all over the place. But anyhow, the assumption is that he's going to add more speed to the race. And what does that mean? So you look at the rest of the field, there's a horse on the rail called Tap It to Win, who, by the way, also broke his maiden in Saratoga. So he's another one who checks that box for us. And then you've got a horse named Modernist, who was not on the lead last out Louisiana Derby, but who's generally forwardly placed. So what that means is that one potential scenario is that three horses are going to buy for the lead. And, you know, what does that mean for Tis the Law? Well, like Rob said, he's pretty tactical. He's pretty handy. You can put him wherever you want to put him. That probably means he's sitting behind those horses. He could either potentially kind of tuck in, save ground, maybe in the two path, or he's sitting to their outside. I don't know if he's a horse who's okay with taking dirt. I can sort of recall him running both ways, being both on the rail and being on the outside. But either way, he's the kind of horse who could benefit from that scenario. So that doesn't hurt Tis the Law. Like I said, I'm looking for a way to beat Tis the Law. So I've actually envisioned a scenario, and this is not just something that I pulled out of thin air. I actually went back and watched replays for all these horses. And I truly believe that Tap It to Win is a little bit of a sneaky play in here because although the expectation is that there's an expectation that Four Left and Modernist are going to go with him, I don't think they're fast enough to go with him if Tap It to Win actually goes. And he's drawn the rail, too. So he doesn't have to really do much maneuvering. Johnny Velasquez just has to get him out of the gate and send him, which is what he did last out. He posted a 97 buyer in an allowance race, a first-level allowance race. That's really rare. You don't really see horses in allowance races posting those kinds of numbers. They post those numbers when they do well in stakes races and in graded stakes races. To do that there and to do that off of a 6-furlong race prior, so his first time stretching out to that mile or second time at that distance, was a very positive sign for me. And then when I look back at the horse's replays, I realized the only time he's run poorly is when the jockey tried to restrain him and the jockey really tried to settle him down and tried to see if they could get him to rate from off the pace. That's not this horse's style. Tap It to Win wants to go as fast as he can, get him to the lead. And really, Johnny being up last time, I'm not the kind of guy who will tell you, hey, bet the jockey. It's not that. Sometimes you see a horse and jockey just fit and gel. I think I saw something pretty magical with the way they teamed up last out. And I think there's a very good chance that Johnny gets that horse on the lead, is able to settle him down. I don't think the other two that I mentioned are going to press him as much as other people think they might. And does that mean he's going to hang on and hold off Tis the Law? Maybe not. But at least, you know, I think if you're playing the race, if you're looking to play an exacta, those are two horses that I'm using together. And then you could expand out. If you want to play a trifecta, you could use those two horses in the top two spots or the superfecta, whatever it might be.
Tap It to Win, his last race was about 2 weeks ago. Didn't, if I read properly, didn't he set the track record at Belmont?
He was close. Yeah, he was just a couple ticks off, which is impressive because, I mean, you think about the number of races that have happened at Belmont over the last, you know, however many hundred plus years. Yeah, so Dan, just a little, I have a long history of coming on this show and picking a son of Tappet to win the Belmont. And they all seem to run second, but I'm with you. That's going to be my pick also. And so one interesting thing too, I wanted to bring up, Tis the Law is by a stallion named Constitution. And what's interesting about him, and again, I'd be interested to hear what Dan thinks, is we talk about Tappet. We've talked about Tappet, since I've been coming on this show, and he's really been the preeminent stallion in this country the last decade. One thing he hasn't done yet is produce a male heir, a horse that's become a stallion himself that could fill Tappet's shoes if and when he's pensioned. And that day's coming relatively soon. Tappet is I think he's approaching 20 years old. I think he was born in maybe 2003. So he's 17. So he's still got a few good years left, but he hasn't really produced a horse up until this year that you would really has proven himself as a stallion. And it does seem like Constitution might be that horse. Now, Constitution, this is his first crop of runners or three-year-olds this year. And he's been off to an absolutely wild start. You know, I really think that Constitution is going to end up being Tappet's male heir. And so, you know, this is kind of a big race for Constitution as a stallion. If Tis the Law can win the right way, I do think it's really going to cement in a lot of breeders' minds that this stallion Constitution could end up being, you know, maybe not the next Tappet, but certainly the next very big stallion in Kentucky.
Yeah. And those are things that, you know, you're not only interested in if you're an owner and you're in that game when you're looking to buy horses, but you're also interested in that information if you're a bettor, especially this time of year when you see a lot of two-year-olds running their first races and even some of these three-year-olds obviously stretching out and trying, you know, longer distances for the first time, who's likely to make that jump and, you know, will they be able to do it? And so I agree with you. I just kind of just pulled up a list just because I wanted to try to remind myself of some of the other horses this year who
constitute. It's unbelievable crop.
It's insane. I mean, Independence Hall, Governor Morris. These are names that we've seen on sort of the Triple Crown trail, or you know, they've all been just excellent performers. And you know, at the top of the list is Tis the Law, and if he wins, I mean, it's an incredible feat. So no, I'm with you, and you know, I want to be clear for anyone listening. I am not suggesting that I am overly confident in Tappet to Win wiring this field. I think if everything plays out the way it should, Tis the Law will probably win. What I'm saying is if you're looking to take a little bit of a swing and to gamble, I think Tappet to Win is your most logical horse to do that with.
What are the odds right now on Tappet to Win? What can you get Tappet to Win on right now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I think, you know, and so David Aragona does the morning lines. He does a tremendous job, and it's a thankless job because everyone always complains one way or another about the morning line. I think his morning line is 5-1. I'm curious. I tend to agree with everything Dan's saying, and I think he's going to end up being more 7-2, 3-1. I think people are going to try to, you know, I think Tis the Law is going to be a strong favorite, but I think that, you know, I just think Tappet to Win's kind of the horse that, if you're going to try to play against, I think that he's, given what he did, you know, 2 weeks ago at Belmont, I just think he's going to end up getting a little bit more money than 5-1. I sort of think he's going to end up being 7-2, but, or that thereabouts. I'm curious what you think though, Dan.
Yeah. I unfortunately, I do think, you know, I'm not, so, you know, sort of this just in, I'm not a genius when it comes to I'm not the only one who's envisioned this scenario of Tappet to Win, you know, coming into his own and potentially wiring this field. And so I could see a lot of people sort of coming to similar conclusions. And I'll just mention, you know, for listeners who were like, okay, that's exciting. You mentioned, you know, one of the horse things going to win. I want to play a trifecta or superfecta. I want to get crazy here. Maybe throw a couple of horses into the combinations underneath Tis the Law and underneath Tap It to Win. And so another horse that I know, there's a slight bit of buzz around him and very similar pattern to Tap It to Win. In fact, he's one of the more lightly raced horses in the field, Dr. Post on the outside. Strong connections, Todd Fletcher. Interestingly, Johnny V rode this horse before, and you would assume that he probably had the option of sticking with Dr. Post or going to Tap It to Win, and he went with Tap It to Win. That being said, this horse, remember I mentioned a 97 buyer for Tap It to Win in the allowance race last out. This horse going 7 furlongs in his maiden special weight win, posted a 96, and then came back and won a stakes race after having a ton of trip trouble. Well, I wouldn't say a ton of trip trouble, but certainly it was not the easiest of trips. He was between horses, got jostled around, and still ran on and won in stakes company first time out. So I think he's one that people are going to potentially hone in on. He doesn't end up with a slouch of a jockey either. He's got Irad Ortiz, who's probably the best rider in the country at this point. And so he's one to look at. It might be a price. And then, you know, look, Rob, this one you made, I don't think you're going to agree with me on this one. This horse I've been chasing for so long and just, he's such a plodder and just never gets there, but I'm just in love with him. I love these. There's sort of these like lovable losers in horse racing that you start getting attached to. You're like, oh, he's trying so hard though. Like, you know, like that sort of thing. So sentimentally, I really like Farmington Road. Two races back, over a wet track. And by the way, there's potential. It might, you know, we may have some weather, something to consider when you're handicapping. Another thing to consider when you're handicapping, by the way, is how the track is playing all day. So watch those earlier races and see if speed is holding up well. If it is, you know, bump up, Tap It to Win even more. But Farmington Road, a horse who always, you know, is just way out of it early. It's just way in the back of the pack and will just make just one run and will usually, you know, hit the board or come close. So if it's the alternative scenario where there is a lot of pace and they're all battling each other, Farmington Road is a horse who logically could finish second or third. I don't think he's got it in him to win, but he's a horse who can, I think, you know, pick up some pieces maybe. And he's one that you might get at closer to 15 to 1.
Dan, I know we only have you for just about 3 more minutes because Chris Felica, the bear from ESPN, is going to join us on the podcast. And there were some other horses and some other races that you liked. So if we could go through those before we let you go, that'd be great. Why don't we start with the, you said race 6?
Yeah, let's take a look at race 6 briefly. It's the Wonder Against It. It's a mile on the turf. This race features a couple of horses that are coming out of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies turf. A big race, obviously, at the end of the year for 2-year-old female horses on the turf. Sweet Melania is a horse who finished third in that race last year, has a lot of speed. She broke from the 12 post, crossed over, went fast, hung in, only got passed by a couple of horses late, including a horse who's an absolute freak in Charing. So Sweet Melania is a horse who I think is going to get a lot of play, but I also think she could face some pressure from one or two other horses in the field. And so I'm looking for a little bit of price in the race. And the horse I landed on is Highland Glory. I would play the race combining Sweet Melania and Highland Glory. I think Sweet Melania gets softened up and Highland Glory passes late. Highland Glory has also had some interesting trips in her short career, especially the race last out where she finished second. She ran a remarkable race, though. If you have a chance to look at that replay, check it out.
Yeah, Highland, she ran big that day. She really did.
Absolutely. So Highland Glory, Sweet Melania for me in race 6. That's the Wonder Again. The 7th. 7th is a really good betting race. It's not a stakes race. It's a 6-furlong turf race for New York bred horses, fillies and mares. I landed on a horse to the outside, the 10 horse Light in the Sky. This is one who we talked about, you know, that Saratoga horses who appear at Saratoga. This is one who ran a really nice debut turf race at Saratoga, beat a horse named My Sassy Sarah, who's back in this race and who I like a lot as well, has only had one other turf start since then. It was an open company, so not against New York Reds, against, you know, tougher open company. Did not run as well in that race, but there are a lot of positive angles here, including the blinkers going on for the first time. So for me, Light in the Sky would be the pick in the 7th. That's the 10 horse. And the horse, the long wind up to the tees that I mentioned at the start, the Jaipur Stakes, is the 9th race. And in the 9th race, I like Oleksandra, the only female runner in the race, ran big last out in the Monrovia, comes back here. There should be enough pace, I think, up front between Pure Sensation and Hidden Scroll. Oleksandr, I like picking up the pieces. 2 for 2 at Belmont on the turf as well. So that would be a strong opinion for me in the ninth race.
Fantastic. Dan, thank you so much. Really do appreciate your time. Why don't you, so for our podcast listeners out there, you know, how can they find out more information in regard to ABR and how to follow you on social media and all those good things?
Totally. Thank you. Yeah, go to americasbestracing.net. We've got all the Belmont Stakes previews you could ever dream of. And then on social media, specifically on Twitter, check out at ABR Live. We're going to be doing a live show tomorrow. We'll actually have Penelope Miller on the grounds at Belmont Park with live reports for us too, and we'll be streaming remotely, me and Bram Weinstein, formerly of ESPN and currently of ESPN Radio. So yeah, check us out, and thank you for the opportunity to be on here today.
Fantastic. Tell Bram I said hello.
I will. I definitely
tell him
will.
Tell him I miss him. Thank you so much, Dan. Appreciate
good
it.
Good seeing you, Dan.
All right. Good seeing you guys. Thank you.
All right. All right. The podcast continues, talking all things Belmont, getting you ready for Saturday from early till late. And one of my favorite humans on the planet, I work with him at ESPN. He's part of Daily Wager, and that's the Bear. Chris Felica joins me. And Rob Masiello. Have you guys ever met? Do you guys know each other at all?
I'm not sure.
No.
I was just trying to think. Yeah, I don't know if we've ever met.
So Chris, Rob is a very dear friend of mine. He's a horse race. He owns horses. He's a, you know, he's, and he's been so kind to me to introduce me, even more so to the sport and educate me on the sport. And he's, for the past three, this is going on 4 years now, he previews and recaps all three legs of the Triple Crown for my radio show on 98.7 ESPN. So he's just truly awesome. And we're thrilled that you're joining us on the podcast. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. Kind of a weird weekend. I was just doing my pod with Stanford Steve earlier, and he's like, you know, I feel kind of cheated that we're not getting a mile and a half, and it's that Belmont's the first one and not the third one. But as I said, I go, that's okay to feel that way. That's totally right. But I personally am a huge fan that the Belmont is running, even though it is a mile and a half, and it kind of changed a mile and an eighth rather. And it changes the dynamic of the race, but I'm looking forward to it. There's some other grade one stakes on the card, but I'm getting a little antsy, hoping that we get some other sports back in our lives soon. But as I said to everybody, I'm healthy. I've got a roof over my head and I got a job. So everything else is, after that is really insignificant.
God bless. God bless. Amen. All right. Well, let's start with the Belmont. That's what we did with Dan. Let's do it with you. In the conversation we just had from Dan from ABR, you know, obviously Tis the Law is the favorite, but if you want to win some money, you got to hopefully put some money on a horse that might upset Tis the Law. And already on the podcast, a lot of love for Tap It to Win. So really curious, how are you playing the Belmont come Saturday afternoon?
Yeah, I think Tis the Law obviously is going to be very, very hard to beat. I think where he's drawn on the outside puts Matty Franco in a really good position to take back as far as he wants or stay as close to the pace as he needs. I just love the versatility of this horse, and I'm going to key him in the exacta and trifecta in the first and second spots. But I am not as high on Tap It to Win as some people, and I totally saw it earlier in the week that he potentially could be low in speed in the race and maybe get a jump on the rest of the field and hold them up, because the misconception about the Belmont, especially at a mile and a half, and even in the route races now at Belmont, those one turn mile and an eighth races, that long stretch, it really favors the closers to make up ground in the stretch, but really it doesn't. That's kind of a misnomer. I mean, I think Creator was like the first closer in like 20 years to win the Belmont. So I think Tap It to Win is going to have company up front. I think obviously the Doug O'Neill horse, Four Left, will be on the lead and kind of soften him up late. And can he hang on for third or so? Yeah, he probably could. But I'm against Tap It to Win in the play spots. And let me throw another interesting scenario out there for you. It's with the other Steve Asmussen horse in this race, Jungle Runner, the hopeless long shot. I don't know if you guys remember the horse Lynchburg from a couple of years ago when Steve Asmussen acquired him and entered him in the Belmont as essentially a rabbit for his other horse in the race, Creator. The thought was in that race, Destin, the Todd Pletcher horse, was going to have a pretty easy pace scenario, and maybe he could be the one to wire the field. Lynchburg was entered in the race and softened up Destin just enough for Creator to get up. Now, I'm not saying that's the case. I don't know that. It's just a handicapping guess and hypothesis, especially being the Jungle Runner hasn't shown a ton of speed in his races. But it wouldn't be the first time you've had an uncoupled entry. We saw it in the Belmont a couple of years ago with Justify, what was the name of the Pleasant Hope or something like that?
He was more of a fullback that day. Yeah, do you remember what he did going to the first day? It was unbelievable.
He kind of served in the blocking back. Yeah. But I think Pneumatic is a very, very live long shot. And if I had to pick one horse as the upsetter to Tis the Law, it would be Pneumatic. Look, that last race, the Matt Wynn, he set the pace. He drew down inside. Was pot committed to go early. And that, if you look at his past performances, that's not his running style. He wants to be a closer stalker from off the pace, and he couldn't do it that day. And despite running in a running style that he really doesn't like, he only got beat a little over a length by Maxfield, who would be 4-5 with Tis the Law in this race. So that was a sneaky good race. And I think Pneumatic is a very live horse in this race. And the other live horse, I think, in the race is Modernist. And I think he's someone that people are forgetting about. Belmont obviously won the Derby with Country House last year at 65-1. Won the Belmont with Drosselmeyer in 2010, who I think was 13-1 or so. Nearly won the Belmont with Vision and Verse at 29-30-1 as well. His best Triple Crown performances are with long shots. You look at the Risen Star, he kind of won that race near the lead in a grinding out fashion. Then was basically eliminated start in the Louisiana Derby with the post draw. I mean, he wasn't going to win from post 14, and then yeah. Wells Bayou in New York traffic essentially went around the track in a merry-go-round fashion. For him to still run third from post 14, with being 4 or 5 wide around the track the entire time in a race where no one was making up ground, and now you get a nice, cozy post position. I think he's post position number 4 in this race. Belmont and Junior Alvarado have teamed up to win a lot of races at Belmont Park in the last few years. So I think this horse might get forgotten a little bit about in the wagering. So I'm gonna wind up keying Tis the Law first and second in the exacta and trifecta. And then I'm gonna try and beat what I think are gonna be the second and third choices, Sol Volante and Dr. Post in the second spot. And I'm gonna use Max Player, Modernist, and Pneumatic in the second position, and then basically use everybody except for Jungle Runner and 4 left in third spot in the try, and try and beat the second and third choice to boost the exacta and try a little bit.
All right, Bear, we only have a few minutes left. We've got Ron Lombardi, who's going to be joining us momentarily. But I know there were a few other races that you had your eye on some other horses. One in particular, the fifth race. Who do you like in that one?
This is for Friday, Friday afternoon today. The fifth race at Belmont, the 10-horse Variant Perception, who's 9-2. I think Shiraz is a beatable favorite in that race later today. And I think the outside post, Michelle's Nevin Barn, is winning at a pretty high rate right now. This horse broke mated 7 furlongs and should get a good stalking trip. Relish that sprint distance. The sixth race, the sixth horse, not so easy, who is 6-1. I'm surprised this one's a little bit shorter on the morning line. And David Duncan, the apprentice rider, Cardenas, have won some races already today, at the meet. This one drew the rail on his debut, predictably did nothing. Drops back to turf today. Nice price. I like Not So Easy in the sixth. And the 10th race, the 11 horse, Devil's Rendezvous. I caught a horse with the former Gary Contessa assistant last week. A lot of similar attributes. Dropping from maiden special to maiden claiming. Cuts back from a rat race to a sprint on the turf. Last ran at Saratoga last year. Outside draw. Same jockey combination with Cancel. I got a play against the favorite in here, Abby Normal, who's 0-14, has no speed, is a plotter who just likes to nibble in the trifecta. So Devil's Rendezvous at 6-1 in the last at Belmont as well.
And so all three of those are on Friday, Bear? Is that right?
Yes. Yep.
Fantastic. So hopefully we'll be playing with house money come Saturday.
Exactly right. I shouldn't say that. That's actually today, Thursday. I should take that back.
Okay. All right. Barry, thank you.
I'm so excited for the weekend to get ahead of myself.
I know. It's been a long time coming. Barry, thank you so much for your time, my friend. Appreciate it.
Take care. Have a great weekend. Enjoy.
Good luck. Same to you.
See you later.
Same to you. Okay. All right. You know what? It keeps on coming here on this podcast. Yeah. And joining us, a very dear friend of mine, and that is Ron Lombardi from Mr. Amore Stables. Ron, I unfortunately have you on mute because you joined the podcast prior to us saying farewell to the bear. So I'm going to have to ask you to unmute yourself. Can you do that? Uh-oh.
Gotcha.
There you go. Ron Lombardi joining us here.
High technology. We're all good.
You look great, my friend. You look like you've lost quite a few pounds.
I have lost a few pounds. Although, you know, I was doing really well for the first 60 days of the pandemic. And then since the restaurants opened up for outdoor seating on Monday, I put about 6 pounds back on. So I don't know what the future holds, but everything's good. You look great as well.
Oh, I've been playing a lot of golf, so I'm getting that tan back. Thank God. I'll be honest with you. I'm just, if you're scared, say you're scared. I'm scared to still be in those type of social environments. So I've just been spending a lot of time playing golf and hiking, you know?
Yeah, I'm over it, honestly. I may be foolish, but I think we need to start, you know, getting out and socializing, and it's going to spread. I mean, you know, the more people get out, it's just a matter of time. And, you know, you have to be cautious and take care of the people that are vulnerable, you know, the seniors and everything, and go from there. Because as you open up a business and stuff, you're going to get more cases and there's more testing. But hopefully some days we'll have fans back at the track.
Hopefully, obviously not this Saturday. Now, Ron, have you met Rob Masiello before? Have you two?
No.
I'm quite surprised. So Rob is a very dear friend and he's been on my program time and time again to preview and recap the Triple Crown. He's in Florida right now. He's making his way back.
Lucky him. So
Rob, you're making your way back on Saturday. So are you going to be, how are you going to be watching these races?
We're flying up Saturday morning. So we actually got, believe it, this is a kind of a crazy story, but, we've had a place down here for several years and, we've been renting from someone who, like 6 or 9 months ago, they also live in New York. They rented the place to us and the lady's husband retired, and they needed the apartment back. So we had mutually agreed to March 15th that I would move out. So I'd always planned to come down in early March and kind of clean everything out. We haven't used it as much the last couple of years because I have a 3-year-old. So anyway, it was very stressful because when we ended up flying down was right when Corona was getting started. I think we literally left the day that the whole Tom Hanks thing and the NBA shut down that whole day. So we flew down here, we moved out, we moved into our new place, and then we didn't really want to get on a commercial flight anytime soon. So we've just kind of been camped out down here, but now we're kind of ready to go back. So we're going to leave Saturday morning and get back in time for the races.
All right. Well, you're coming back to New York and New Jersey where, you know, you can go to restaurants like Ron Lombardi said.
You know, I tend to agree with Ron. I mean, I think we have to figure it out, right? Like we can't just all stay in our houses forever. I certainly think outdoor seating at restaurants is a good middle ground and doing stuff outside, you know, and look, I'm not an epidemiologist. I just, you know, I think what Ron's saying is right. I hope that things work out and we stay smart, especially with the more vulnerable population.
Now, Ron, yeah. Your daughter owns and runs Sorlina, a fantastic restaurant here in Hoboken. So is she extending her seating? Just out of curiosity, is she going to be extending her seating into the street? Because I know Washington Street in Hoboken is they're doing that now.
Yeah, she's able to put basically about 14 to 18 additional seats in the two parking spaces on 11th Street.
Oh, nice.
But you know, all in all, I mean, she's sold out now through the end of June. I mean, as soon as she put notice out that she was going to be open, you know, everything, she's doing 4 seatings every night. They're all sold out, but she's still, you're only about a third capacity. So that makes it really difficult. But, you know, people are staying shorter. You know, people are trying to move on, you know, after 90 minutes. to allow other people to come in. So you can't sit there, you know, for, you know, 3-4 hours at a night, you know, on a night, but it's difficult. I mean, she's down a lot, but so far the first three nights have been, you know, been great. She's done well. And we're building a permanent platform on the street with planners and everything. So that's in the process. And hopefully that'll be done by Sunday or Monday. And, you know, you just have to deal with this, you know, the cards that you're dealt. And, it's not good. They're projecting like 40% of the restaurants in New York City will not reopen. You know, that's just crazy. I mean, it's good for the people that are able to, you know, get through this, but it's just unfortunate that a lot of businesses are going to go under.
Well, I'm glad that your daughter's restaurant is able to get back in action and hopefully thrive in this horrible time.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this is a racing podcast, so let's get back to what's going on with the Belmont and so Ron, you know, first and foremost, do you have any horses that are going to be running at the Belmont?
I wish I had a 3-year-old this year.
I think this would have been the year for Firenze Fire.
Exactly.
One turn, he would have been real tough.
I mean, it's especially going a mile in an eighth now at the Belmont.
Yeah, it's yeah.
You know, unfortunately, I had a horse that was doing well, but he got injured, and he's going to have to be retired. So we'll see. I got a couple of, you know, still work in process, but it doesn't look like I'll have anything, you know, at that level this year.
All right. Well, everybody that we've had on the podcast, we start at the top, and of course, that's the Belmont Stakes. And how are you going to be playing it? What horses do you have your eye on? What do you think is going to happen here?
I think Tis the Law is clearly the, you know, he's the only grade one winner in the race, winning the Champagne and the Florida Derby. I think he's, you know, anything can happen in horse racing, you know, as we all know, but I think he's the clear favorite, you know, as is reflected in the, you know, early odds. And then I would hook him up probably with the 2, the 9, and the 10. And I just think that, you know, Sol Valente and Dr. Post, you know, Pneumatic I like as well. Those are the ones. I mean, you got some good jockeys on there. I mean, Manny Franco on Tis the Law, I think, will do a nice job. And then Dr. Post, you know, you got Irad on there. And, you know, I love Irad. And, but I see it as really a one-horse race. I think it'll be some speed up front. And, you know, what he did in the Florida Derby where they had to move him outside and, you know, he got through traffic and just – he showed I think he's going to be a real special horse, Tis the Law.
All right. In regard to Saturday, some of the other races, is there another race, another horse that you have?
Yeah, I like the turf sprint, 6 furlongs on the turf. And there, you know, I like Pure Sensation. He's been off for 7.5-8 months, but he's always shown that he can come back, you know, from a 6-7 month layoff and run really well. So I like him as well. I think he'll be a good bet. So, you know, maybe hook those two up in the double could be a good thing.
How are you going to be spending your Saturday?
Well, definitely watching the races. I'll probably have a little get together. You know, keep it under the state limit of 50 people or whatever, hopefully. when Frenzy ran back a couple weeks ago, we had about 25 people over, and unfortunately, a monsoon hit the track, you know, an hour before the race, but we'll see. He came out of the race well, so we'll just go from there, and hopefully, you know, we can get him back on track. But it should be a fun day. I mean, there's 6 stake races on Saturday, so it should be a lot of good action, and it's just unfortunate that there's no fans. And it's just interesting, you know, casinos are going to start opening up, and so you could have people indoors gambling, but you can't outside at a track. I don't understand some of the logic and reasoning behind this, but that's not my job.
Let me ask you guys this. What are you hearing about the Kentucky Derby again? That date is for September 5th and Preakness is October 3rd. I'm sure no decisions have been made yet, but is your gut telling you in regard to how we're seeing the country reopen again? Do you believe that there will be fans in the grandstands?
I would hope so. I mean, you know, maybe they'd limit the inside stuff and keep everything outside. I mean, you have a tremendous opportunity. I mean, especially, you know, Churchill Downs. I mean, you know, usually typically they have 150,000 people there. If they just limited it to 50,000 with the infield and the grandstands and everything, I'm sure they could, you know, make do. And hopefully by then a lot of things will be lifted and we'll be in a better situation.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I agree with Ron. I mean, I think I know just, you know, big part of their earnings structural downs every year come from the Derby. And I think, so I know, being on the NYSA board, we've been dealing with that a lot of trying to figure out what the best way and working with the governor's office on how racing can open. And there is some hope that at least owners will be able to show up to Saratoga this summer. I think what a lot of these tracks are doing, including New York, is really just waiting as long as possible, honestly, and hoping that some good news is going to come through. And, you know, there has been good news in New York. So, I think that's sort of just been the strategy, is just to wait and see and hopefully, you know, as things die down a little bit, be able to gradually reopen. But I agree with Ron. I mean, I think, you know, it does seem like outdoor transmissions a lot less than indoor transmissions. So, you know, there's got to be a way to do this responsibly.
It'd be a shame to have Saratoga with no fans.
Yeah.
That'd be devastating. Just from a personal level, I mean, I just love going up there. You know, I probably go up for 4 or 5 weekends a year, and it's enjoyable from the track, the restaurants, and just the night scene there. It's a great place, and I really look forward to it.
Ron, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. I really do appreciate it, and enjoy Saturday with your party of less than 25. What is it? Or what are we to now? 50, less than 50?
Maybe
people?
50. We'll see. Yeah. We'll see.
All right.
Oh, I got a question. Who do you like, Anita?
I'm a sponge right now. You guys are all the experts. I mean, of course, this is a podcast. The folks listening can't see. We're doing it on Zoom. Look, I'm taking notes. See these? See all my notes? I'm taking notes. I'm going to spend some time. I'm going to digest it all and hopefully walk away a big winner on Saturday evening. So hopefully. I'm taking it in right now. I'll be sure to text you what all my plays are.
You got it.
All right, very Ron. Good. Great scene. You look great. Enjoy Saturday.
Thank you. Take
you
care.
You got it. You got it, Ron Lombardi. All right, Rob, a few other topics I want to touch on with you before we end the podcast. First and foremost, no woman trainer has been a winner at the Belmont Stakes, but that could change this year if Max Player is victorious with Linda Rice. Obviously, a huge long shot, but you know, side note, something to cheer for.
Yeah, so I know Linda a little bit. She's actually also on the NYSA board with me. She's a wonderful trainer. She actually won the Saratoga trainers meet, I want to say it was about 10 years ago or so, which is a very prestigious, like the Saratoga meet is sort of the big meet in New York, and it's what all the, you know, all the owners, all the jockeys, all the trainers want to either win or do well. So the fact that she was able to do that a decade ago is truly impressive. And she's just, you know, I've been on the board for 2.5 years, and, you know, she's a real leader in the industry, and, you know, it certainly would be a good thing, to see her, win the Belmont this year. I'd certainly be happy to see that happen.
The other story, Todd Pletcher obviously has more wins at the Belmont than any other conditioner trainer. And so far in talking to Dan and talking to Bear and talking to Ron, all of them did mention Dr. Post. And of course, was it Dan who likes Farmington food as well? So, I mean, how much in regard to these horses, how much is it a factor that Todd is training them?
Yeah, I mean, listen, Todd is sort of the preeminent trainer in New York over the last, let's say, 25 years. And I think it makes a difference. Todd has done it for a very long time. You know, it's a kind of a virtuous circle where the more a trainer has success, the more they're going to get good horses. The more they get good horses, the more success they have, and on it goes. But you know, I just think it's when it comes to someone like Todd, he's known as a guy that's so precise and is very, you know, one of the stories you'll always hear about from Todd is he trains a lot of horses, and you always hear an owner say like, man, I talked to Todd about X horse. I just went up to him to say hi, and he knew exactly what this horse was doing. This horse galloped today, and he breezed 5 days ago, and he breezed well, and this is what he's going to do tomorrow, and blah, blah, blah. Like he's kind of a savant in a sense. And I think with just all of the experience he's had over the years, you can't discount the fact that he's been through it all. It's sort of like, you know, an NFL or a college coach that's just seen everything and just knows exactly kind of has seen every scenario happen and knows exactly how to handle it. So I think that's a lot of kind of what makes Todd Pletcher who he is. And especially with Dr. Post, Dr. Post is actually owned, by a good friend of mine, the Violas, Vinny and Teresa Viola, who actually, I owned Ring Weekend with, who ran in the Preakness back in 2014, and wonderful people. And I know I actually spoke to Vinny last week, and I know he's very, very excited about this horse's potential. You know, he's trained really well. I think he to me, physically, just looking at him, he looks like the type of horse that is going to be, you know, a classic, you know, three-year-old. I was going to say two-turn three-year-old, but the Belmont this year obviously isn't a two-turn race, but just a very classic, you know, type of horse that I think is going to have a real shot to win one of these big three-year-old races this summer. But yeah, I mean, Todd's a guy that's done it for just a really long time. And someone you always have to respect, especially in New York.
So interesting little tidbits here, little nuggets for those to digest as we get ready for Saturday. Just three horses born in New York have won the Belmont, and none since 1882, and Tis the Law will attempt to become the fourth on Saturday. So, you know, even though he's the favorite, something else to cheer for, especially if you're a New Yorker. And also, the Belmont Stakes has been won by the betting favorite just three times in the last 15 years, and two, of course, were the Triple Crown winners, Justify and American Pharaoh, and a Fleet Alex. So, I mean, you know, only three in the last 15 years. I know we're sitting here and we're giving Tis the Law a ton of love today. But yeah, there's a chance.
It's always a crazy race, right? And it's definitely the race that you get some horses that you just never, like a Ruler on Ice kind of comes to mind. He was a Kelly Breen horse that won 10 years ago. And like, you could have told me he was going to win the race and I still wouldn't have bet on him. You know, just one of those horses that just made absolutely no sense. It tends to be that race because it's just such a different race. But I mean, I guess the thing this year is like, it's more of a just typical, you know, mile and eighth is a much more normal distance for these three-year-olds to run. But yeah, I mean, then the flip side to that, Anita, is like this year is so crazy. And again, a lot of these horses in March and April, no one really knew what was going to happen with the racing schedules. So like there could be a goofy outcome. I don't think you can discount that at all. And I certainly wouldn't blame anyone for trying to take a shot against a favorite on Saturday.
All right, let's end on this. And it's kind of a sad note. But here's the thing with me. If anyone knows anything about me, I love animals. I love pets. Considering I have five dogs, and some people think I'm crazy for that, it's fine. I love these horses. And I know there's a conflict of interest here in regard to PETA and a number of people who feel that the sport is inhumane for a number of these horses. But reports are, Rob, that 21 horses have died this year at Belmont. And three, in fact, on the same day. And so I want to have the conversation with you in regard to how you think Belmont and other tracks, what they can do differently, what needs to change maybe in regard to the laws and in trying to eliminate the number of deaths and injuries that we see with horses today.
Well, so listen, I mean, it's something, and again, to bring back up, you know, probably the thing we work on more than anything else on NYTHA. And NYTHA is the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association. I would say the number one thing that we're focused on is equine and human safety. And look, it's, you know, one thing I would say is that we've done, I think, a very good job of reducing the number of horse deaths in the state of New York. I believe the number over the last decade, we've actually reduced the number by over 40%, which is a significant achievement, I think, and understanding what the risks are. But I think the way that we look at it is trying to find fact-based evidence that's going to reduce the number of injuries and mortalities. You know, understanding that, look, I can come on here and lie to you and say one day it's going to be zero. I don't think that day's ever going to happen. It's, you know, there's inherent risk with racing. But I think it's our obligation as owners, and I certainly consider it my obligation to work like hell to make sure that number is as low as humanly possible. And if we're not doing that, then we don't deserve, you know, in my opinion, we don't deserve to exist. So what are some of the things we've done? Well, over the last decade, we've we've done a lot of things in concert with our trainers and vets. You know, specifically, we've done things like increase the withdrawal rates for some drugs like NSAIDs. So, you know, if you think about like a horse taking an NSAID that's an anti-inflammatory that's going to make them feel less pain, that's obviously a double-edged sword because, you know, if a horse isn't feeling something going wrong, that can cause a catastrophic injury. So we've done stuff like that. We've increased the beefed up the amount of information in vet reports before races. And, you know, some other things we've done some things with voiding claims where, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, and this kind of would require a little bit longer of an explanation, but, you know, big chunk of racing is claiming races where every horse that's running a race is up for sale in that race. And so one of the things we've done is to kind of avoid the scenario of like a horse is starting to show signs of injury and someone's just going to dump them into a claiming race to get rid of them. We've put in some safeguards to kind of be able to disallow that sort of behavior from happening. So, you know, I know one of the things that PETA has been advocating for, which I'm interested in, is the doing CT scans of horses before races to see, because the truth is, and this is the issue we deal with, is a lot of times these horses will be completely sound, but there'll be a little something brewing that you can't detect, and then that turns into a catastrophic injury. And so one of the things that PETA has been trying to push for is doing kind of these bone scans of horses before races to see if there's anything that's going on. They're doing that in California. You know, the truth is that the evidence to date is pretty inconclusive. You know, I'm certainly hopeful that it's going to work. And I know some trainers out west think that it works. But I think our approach in New York, and I do want to say also that New York, by far across the country has the lowest mortality rate of any racing jurisdiction in the country. And, you know, and again, the reason that is the case is I think because we've really tried to take an evidence-based approach in fixing some of this stuff. And so, you know, that's really what our focus is. And I think if the data is there for the CT scans, we're going to be on it. But, you know, I think that that's sort of the approach we have to take with the understanding that occasionally there is going to be that day when more than one horse breaks down. That's just, unfortunately, it's not a linear thing. There are weeks when no horses break down. And then sometimes there's a day where two horses break down. And, it, you know, I'm not necessarily sure that just because two horses broke down one day, that means that everything you're doing is wrong. Just like I don't believe that if there's a 2-week period where no horse or a month period where no horses break down, that means that everything's perfect and we don't have to worry about it anymore. There's, you know, you have to kind of take a high level, in my opinion, you have to take a high level perspective on this. So, you know, it's something we're always working on. I'm sure we have a board meeting next week. I'm sure this is going to come up and we're going to, you know, continue to work to make things better.
Well, I appreciate your time and I appreciate your insight, and you'll be on with me Saturday. Again, my show time has changed because the Belmont, I'll be leading into the Belmont Stakes on 98.7 ESPN radio. So instead of noon to 3 on Saturday, I'll be 2 to 5:30, and you'll be able to hear Rob on that show. I also want to thank Dan Torgman. Can't believe I got his last name pronounced properly the first time around. I'm very proud. About that,
there you go.
For myself, from ABR, make sure you check out their site and get up to speed, especially this Saturday. We're in the middle of a pandemic, not a lot to do, so you could stay home, watch the Belmont, and wager on a number of these races, and ABR will give you lesson 101, how to do it all. Chris Felica, the bear, was on the podcast with us. I want to thank him as well. And Ron Lombardi from Mr. Amore Stables. So Rob, again, thank you for your time. I really do appreciate it as always. And hopefully we're all big winners on Saturday.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks for having me, Nita. Talk to you Saturday.
You got it.